Well, time to do it all over again. It's a Tuesday, and yours truly, McCowan, along with his truly, Shannon. Greetings to you, John.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
Too early to tell, I guess. You know, it's not quite the end of March yet. Weather's pretty good. We're going to talk hockey, but we're going to talk specifically about the Edmonton Oilers and what a most interesting team. We saw them a couple, 3 weeks. I don't even know how long ago it was. 3 weeks ago, they played three consecutive games against the Toronto Maple Leafs, who cleaned their clocks.
Well, they beat them. They didn't clean their clocks. They beat them.
Well, they won all three games comfortably and clearly appeared to be the better team.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And based on recent history, you start thinking, well, maybe this is an Edmonton collapse in the process. Maybe they're still not quite ready. And they bounce right back, and the Toronto Maple Leafs go in the other direction completely. What a strange year, huh?
Absolutely. And there was a time in that three-game streak for the Oilers, I thought there was no way now that they would vie for first place. The Maple Leafs were the dominant team in this Northern Division. And perhaps it was going to be Winnipeg that would challenge. And now Winnipeg wins last night in Vancouver. Now there are three teams at the top of the standings within 2 points of each other. It's quite amazing. The Maple Leafs and the Oilers have played really well since that three game swoon, and the Maple Leafs haven't. I don't know what explanation is for it. I mean, goaltenders on either side, the guy in Edmonton's been good. The guy in Toronto has it. Austin Matthews has been a little banged up for the Maple Leafs. But I don't think anybody would have predicted the shift so quickly in 2.5 weeks.
Well, let's talk briefly here before our guest joins us about the Maple Leaf goaltending, since you brought it up. Are we at a point now where some decisions have to be made as to who's going to get the majority of the starts? Or is this a given? Is it Anderson come hell or high water?
No, I don't think so. I think Jack Campbell is going to be given an opportunity to play a lot more. Perhaps it's to give Anderson a rest. The coach on Saturday night said that Anderson didn't even dress because he's a little dinged up, which is interesting. But as we've seen with Freddie Anderson the last few years, he gets tired, and as most people do, but he gets tired, and it really reflects in his game. And to have Jack Campbell as the backup acquired from Los Angeles is, and he's only played 4 games this year. So the issue with Campbell isn't, is he a good goaltender, is can he stay healthy? So the Leafs are walking a bit of a tightrope now when it comes to goaltending. If Campbell's healthy, he might be able to do the job and give Anderson some relief. But the challenge for the Maple Leafs is to make sure that Jack Campbell stays healthy.
Well, but I mean, the question is Anderson clearly the number one goaltender in Toronto? And if Campbell plays well over the last few weeks of the season, and you go to the playoffs, is it a given that Anderson is the number one goaltender and gets probably all of the playoff games?
No,
if not all, the vast majority.
I don't think so. I don't think so, Bob.
I don't either.
I think this might be as close to an audition for Jack Campbell to be a number one goalie in the NHL over these next few weeks. Now, I think Anderson's a really good goalie. I may be in the minority in Southern Ontario, but I think Anderson
can play the
position. I know I am. But, I mean, the Maple Leafs, for the first 20 games of the season, were where they were a lot because of Freddie Anderson, what he did. He did an amazing job for them. But this is the swoon we see every year at this time of year, and I'm not sure what the explanation is for it.
Well, he is also a free agent at the end of this season.
Mm-hmm.
So the Maple Leafs are going to have to make a decision regarding where they go from here. And they have cap issues. And what's
everybody
Anderson?
Has cap issues, Bob, because the cap's flat.
I get it. I understand. But they have Morgan Riley that they have to take care of, and they got to find some money for him. And Anderson, might be the guy who they sacrifice in order to do that. I mean, who's more important, Anderson or Riley, to your team? And I think the answer to that question is going to come in the next few weeks as we find out whether Campbell's a suitable replacement.
You know, on the roundtable yesterday when Jim Houston and Mike Zeisberger were with us, we got talking about the value of goaltenders. And I actually started to chuckle because I think a lot of people feel the same thing about goaltending that you feel about relief pitchers. You can find them. You can find a goaltender to stop pucks.
And I don't disagree with that philosophy.
I know. There are some others that don't feel that way. The Edmonton Oilers last summer were in a very similar position. They had one goaltender under contract who was, you know, probably not supposed to be a number one starter. They went into the free agent market, tried to find one, and then had to settle with the guy that was with them the year before, Mike Smith. And Mike Smith has proved to be very good. So, the challenge to be a free agent is one thing for the team. The challenge for the player during COVID is another challenge. I mean, do you dare become an unrestricted free agent and risk not getting a quality payday because we still don't know what October, November, December are going to look like in the NHL, particularly in our country, Bob? We don't know if there are going to be people in the seats. We think there are going to be people in the seats in the United States. We're not sure about it in our country. So there are lots of questions to be asked as unrestricted free agency looms for guys like Fred Anderson.
Meanwhile, the Edmonton Oilers, again, playing well. They have reached the top of the Canadian division in a tie with the Toronto Maple Leafs, although the Leafs have games in hand. Two. And Winnipeg is hovering. But nonetheless, things are going pretty well in Edmonton. What does the general manager do in terms of the next few days and the trade deadline? We'll talk to him about that and a variety of other things when Kenny Holland joins us in just a couple of minutes. Been a pretty good run for the Edmonton Oilers, and maybe a little surprising, as John and I mentioned off the top, after losing three straight, quite convincingly, I would say, to the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'd have to think that our guest was maybe a little concerned about what was happening to his club. He shouldn't have been, because they bounced right back and have been playing very well since then. Ken Holland joins us. He's in Montreal today. Good to see you, Kenny, first of all. Let's go back to that three-game set against the Toronto Maple Leafs. What do you think happened to your team there?
Well, good morning. I think certainly the Leafs played very, very well. They were full marks for all three victories. In all three games, we got off to a good start. And then the Leafs scored first. And, they did a good job in checking, taking our space away. And they were full marks for the victory. And what I liked about our guys, certainly it was a disappointing three-game series. And then I think we had to play Calgary. We bounced back and put together a little bit of a run since. So it's a roller coaster ride, but certainly that was a learning experience. I think those three games and the Leafs were full marks for those victories.
I'm intrigued by, John's been in and around the hockey business all his life. And I just look at various sports, and I'm often intrigued how a GM evaluates a small sample size like that. Did it give you cause to ponder what you might need to do in the future, those three games that you lost to the Maple Leafs?
I mean, certainly that's part of the evaluation process, Bob. I mean, that was both teams were fighting at that time for first place. Toronto come into town and beat us three straight. So certainly that's part of the evaluation process. But I think, it's a 56-game season. There's 48 games, about 44, about 12 games from the deadline to the end of the season for us. So I think you have to look at the whole body of work. And what I also like about, I'm fortunate I was with some good teams there in Detroit for a long time. I think when we won the the Stanley Cup in 08, if I'm not mistaken, in February, we went on a 10-game losing streak. And we ended up winning the Stanley Cup in 2008. Now, we were ravaged by injuries at the time. But, you know, it's a roller coaster ride, and it's about dealing with adversity and how you bounce back. You're going to lose some games in the playoffs. You know, you might lose the first two games. I reflect back in 02 when we won the Cup. We were down 2-0 in Vancouver in the first round and bounced back and won the next four. So certainly that the Toronto series was adversity for our team. Toronto came in with full marks for the victory. And what I liked about our team was our ability to bounce back. And we're starting to play, we continue to play good hockey. So I think that's part of the evaluation process, is how your team deals with adversity. And it was a tough set, but we've bounced back.
With the experience you have, Kenny, how do you manage potential panic that might be around you? How do you do that?
Well, I you know, John, you've been around the game a long time. I think, you know, the world that we live in today, with podcasts and social media and all these different platforms for people to weigh in, I don't know that you, I think you just have to inside stay focused. You know, you have to, your group, our team, our players, our coaching staff have to focus on the task at hand. And how do you deal with it? You gotta win. You gotta bounce back, and you gotta find ways to get some wins. I don't know that you can control the entire message that's out there, because there's so many different ways for people and to voice their thoughts.
That might be the one advantage of this schedule, is because if you lose one game, gosh, you're back at it quickly, aren't you? It's not as if you have 5 days off and you have to worry about your next game.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, we got 56 games in 115 nights. So basically, it's an every second night for 3.5 months. And to your point, you know, when the game's over, we're looking ahead to the next game. And you know, it's 56 game sprint to try to get into the Stanley Cup playoffs.
With Ken Holland, the Oilers' general manager, I'm intrigued by home ice advantage. In sports in general, Kenny, home teams win 54% of their games. And that's all sports. That'd be, you know, baseball, football, basketball, hockey. 54% is the number. And we know that if you're a good team, you're going to win a lot more than 54. If you're a bad team, you're going to win a lot fewer than 54. But the average is 54, and it's really consistent over a long period of time. And I'm wondering what it is about home ice advantage that really gives you an advantage. Part of the equation, we would presume, is the crowd, but we're absent crowds in this environment. What do you think the advantage is, or is it neutralized by the fact that we're in COVID and nobody can go to the games?
Well, I think it's neutralized a little bit by, certainly, Bob, I agree with you, you know, having the crowd, you know, you having 17, 18, 19,000 people cheering you on gives your team energy. The other thing would be obviously last change. You know, the home ice would be, your coach has the matchups. It controls the matchups for the most part. But, you know, I don't know that home ice is going to mean as much this year as in past years because I'm not sure what it'll look like in May and June with fans, but certainly without full houses, home ice, I don't think, means quite as much.
So over the years, you have been infamous within the NHL, looking at the schedule, looking at results, looking at the standings, and saying, okay, this is the magic number to make the playoffs. And in an 82-game schedule, you had it down to a science. What do you do in a 56-game schedule, and when you're only playing seven other teams constantly? How do you do your equation based on what the magic number for playoffs is?
Well, it's a little bit, a lot different, Bob. Obviously, shorter game schedule. I mean, like you said, you know, we still play some teams five and six times here the rest of the year, so lots can happen. You know, it's not like you go out and One team is playing somebody else six times and you're playing somebody else six times. There's so many head-to-head games. So, I'm starting to look. I think once you start to get, to me, you get 20 games on the schedule and then you got 19 and then you got 18 and then you got 17. The games start to run off and then you can start to look, well, if we can go 500 the rest of the way, what does the other team have to do to go by us? So I think we're starting to get, like I said, I think when you get to about 20 games to go and now you start to run off games, you can start to look if the team that's ahead can play, 500 thereabouts the rest of the way, what does the team below have to do to go by? Now, again, teams control their own fates because they play these teams head to head so many times. So I don't know how many points it's going to take to make the playoffs. Certainly, you're going to have to be, above 550, 65 to thereabouts. That's probably seven games over 500. You've got to be in the mix at least for the fourth spot.
How do you feel about the trade deadline? The way it is, and I don't just mean that it's late in the year, and that in my mind the real issue here, Kenny, is can you make a deal with a US-based team, understanding that your player is going to sit for 2 weeks and then probably take a week to get back in shape. That's 3 weeks that you lose, which would be 3 weeks that in a normal year would be critical. Are you reluctant to do deals that way with U.S. teams now?
Bob, I would say to you, I guess I'm going to give you my thoughts being a Canadian. I think you'd have to look at the standings. And if you know you're in, you've got so many points banked away between you and the fifth spot that you're thinking about the playoffs, I think you can consider making an addition that from a U.S. team, knowing you're not going to see him for 3 weeks. But if you're looking to have a player come in and impact your ability to play the way into the playoffs, I don't know that he's going to be able to have much of an impact to help you play your way in, because like you said, it's 2 weeks in quarantine and then it's another week. Now it's 3 weeks. It's a brand new player. The coach doesn't know where he fits in.
Exactly.
You're now down to five, six games, four, five, six games. So I think you're really, if you're making the move at the deadline with it being a Canadian team, it's really for the playoffs to think he's going to help you go in a playoff run. I don't think he can help you in the regular season.
So you've done this for a long time. You know what trade deadline conversations are generally like. How would you compare this year to other years in terms of the kinds of conversations, or more importantly, the number of conversations perhaps that you're having?
Well, it's 3 weeks yesterday. So, still quite a ways to go. And now it's quite a ways in a normal year, but now you factor in if you're a Canadian, probably for the U.S. teams, it's still quite a ways to go because they don't have the quarantine that the Canadian teams got. So certainly for the Canadian teams, the seven Canadian teams, the clock is ticking a little bit more. I'm anxious to see how it's going to affect everybody as much. We're in uncharted waters. I'm anxious to see, I'm having a few calls, not a lot. I think there's so many teams that are on the bubble still, that have a chance to play in. There's probably two, three teams in each division that feel pretty good about themselves. And then you've got the rest of the, you've got some teams that maybe think that they're out, but there's lots of teams that probably want to play five, six more, seven more games before they make a decision on what they're looking to do. And certainly that affects us up in Canada because of the what we just talked about with the quarantine.
So does it change your opinion of what style of trade you make? And what I mean by that is, does it deter you from making a rental? Or if you're going to make a trade now, you better make a trade that not only helps you this year, but for a couple of years to come?
Well, that's a great question. I think, obviously, Bob, John, it depends on, what your needs are and the player that might be available that you're talking about. Then you factor in, you got to factor in the cost, so you evaluate all those different things before you make your decision. Certainly there's lots of speculation by as we work our way over the next 3 weeks. That's, you know, the rumor mill, and that's sort of the fun part, I guess, of the business from a fan's perspective, is speculating what your team is going to do, and are they a buyer, are they seller, and what do they need, and what are they going to add. But as I work the phones, some of that, the rumor mill, there might be some truth to it, but in lots of cases, there's not the truth to it, that, it's different. So, I'll work the phones and make some decisions as we work our way to the trade demo.
At the beginning of the program, John and I had a conversation about goaltending and the importance thereof. And Mr. Shannon made a statement that I don't disagree with. And he put it in the context of, I'm a believer that relief pitching in baseball, you can find them wherever you go. Don't worry about it. There's lots of them out there. And he kind of put goaltending right now in the NHL at kind of that level. There are less than a handful of truly elite goaltenders who have proven it over an extended period of time that you wouldn't even think about moving or changing or doing whatever. But then there's a big, and this is my perception, there's a big group that kind of come and go, are good, and then aren't quite so good. We know goaltending is critical. But how do you view this? Has your team been dramatically impacted by the fact that your goaltending has been pretty good this year?
Well, Bob, I mean, you've got to get good goaltending. That's a part of the equation over the regular season, and more so, I guess, in the playoffs.
Agreed.
I think, there's about 60 goalies in the National Hockey League, and like you said, there's some franchise, there's a few franchise goalies that everybody in the industry and everybody would regard as being at the top of the class. And then there's there's lots of NHL goaltenders that maybe they struggle, they go somewhere else, and they get another opportunity, and they find their game, and they have success. But I think that if I look at our goaltending, I feel good. I really feel really good about our goaltending. Mike Smith has played great all year.
Yeah, you should.
Mikko Koskinen played good, and then I think we probably overworked him early because Smitty got injured. And then when Smitty came back, I think we've had a really good 1-2 punch in goals. So certainly, if you're going to go on a playoff run, the reality is you're probably going to have a goalie or both goalies if you use two. But in the most cases, I think one goalie that really gets on a roll. And I think many goalies in the NHL have the ability to go on a 15, 20 game run. And it's not like it's an 82 game season. So I think that's why there's probably great stories around the league over the last few years where a goalie gets on a roll and carries his team, and maybe not to the Stanley Cup finals and wins a cup, but certainly gets on a roll and carries you for a couple of rounds and gets you into the final four. And maybe that's where you got the 1-2 punch in goals. So I know there's some recent Stanley Cup winners that really have used both goalies in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Obviously, I think about Pittsburgh with Fleury and Murray.
Matt Murray.
So sometimes it's not just one goalie. You use both your goalies. But again, it's just a goalie getting on a roll. And I'm a bit of an NFL fan. So you look at the NFL quarterbacks. There's some franchise quarterbacks, and then some of the quarterbacks move from one team to another team, and they lead their team to success. And I think it's a difficult position playing goal in the National Hockey League. But they're in the NHL for a reason, that they're one of the 50, 40, 50, 60 best goalies in the world, and they have the potential, the ability to go on a roll. And when your team gets going and your goalie's on a roll, you can go for a good run.
But Mike Smith's 39 years old, turned 39 last Sunday. How concerned
are
you
about... Well, Bob, here's my response to that. I won the Stanley Cup, or I say I won. I was part of an organization that won the Stanley Cup in 2002 And our goalie, I think, was what, he 41 or 42, you know, Dominic Hasek. So
yeah, but he had Nick Lidstrom in front of him.
Well, you know what, Bob? It's a different time. I mean, it's we're in a salary cap world now, and certainly the cap is designed for competitive balance. And you know, the team that we had in Detroit in 2002, I think our fourth line was like Larionov, Holmstrom, and Robitaille.
And not bad.
Yeah, those teams don't kind of exist anymore. So it's the cap is designed to kind of, you know, that you can't be quite as deep as you once did.
I guess my question on that is how much discussion do you have with Dave about, okay, listen, we've got to, you know, you're going to make the playoffs. I know you guys are still being cautious, but you're going to make the playoffs. How do you prepare your goaltenders knowing, and Dave loves to put guys on runs. We know that if Mike Smith's hot, Dave's going to trust him. But how much do you talk about, hey, listen, we got to get Mikko in here. We got to get Mikko in there. We've got to do that in order to make sure that by the time the middle of May comes, Mike Smith's fresh.
Well, you know, I think that is probably down the road. You know, You've got us in the playoffs, but we certainly don't feel like that. You know, we feel like we got to win some hockey games and because it's such a fine line between winning and losing, and you can actually play pretty good in this league and lose four or five in a row. So, you know, right now our focus is to win the next game that we play. And then, you know, the next game that you play. And I think that one of the things I think Dave Tippett has done a really good job at in working with them here in Edmonton last year and now this year is he keeps everybody part of the team. He doesn't forget about people too long. He keeps everybody to get to, They get some games. I think he's done a really good job with our goaltending last year. I thought he did a great job in our, you know, early on our goaltenders would kind of split 2-2-2-2, and then he rode Mikko for a while when he got on a roll, and then he rode Mike Smith for a while, and they went back and forth, and you know we felt like we were on our way to playing our way into the playoffs last year, and then the pause hit due to the pandemic, and I thought that the same thing this year. You know, obviously Mikko played a lot early and now it's Mike Smith, but mm-hmm. You know, we'll play both and we're trying to win games. We're trying to put points on the board. And I think as you get down the stretch run, you know, you get down to the last 10 games and if you got to overplay people, cause you got to play your way in, that's what we're going to do. And if the standings say that you're in a little bit better position and you can kind of, you know, rotate the goalies and have more people involved, we'll do. So I think the standings dictate some of the decisions that you make. So for right now, we're just trying to win. We're trying to win a game and a game and a game. We're trying to play our way in and feel good that we've played our way into the playoffs. We're not taking anything for granted.
Ken Holland is with us, the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. He's in Montreal, and we'll take another quick break and come back with more after this. With Ken Holland, Bob McCowan, John Shannon. We have now chatted, Kenny, for, I don't know, 20 plus minutes and haven't mentioned a pretty good player that you've got on your hockey team. And I often feel like we do this with some regularity with guests that are in your situation where you've got a player who's as great as this one is, and obviously Connor McDavid is his name, and you just kind of overlook him and you're looking for other stories because everybody knows how good he is. But you have been on hockey teams, well, with the Detroit Red Wings. There's a pretty good list of great players that went through that organization. Where's this guy on your list? Where's McDavid on the list of the best you've seen?
Well, he's the best player that that I've ever had the pleasure of working with to watch. You know, obviously I've been here about a little over 100 games, 100, you know, I think we played 71 last year and we're, you know, we're 30 something now. So it's 105 games. He's an incredibly special player. He's a generational player and it's not only his ability, you know, his you know, got incredible speed and quickness and great hands and hockey sense, but it's also combined with incredible passion. determination to being the best that he can be on an every night basis. So, I mean, he does things that I've never on a pretty regular basis that I've never seen. He's really, really an incredible generational player.
I might suggest this is the best hockey he's played in the NHL right now.
Well, I mean, you would know. I mean, obviously, I was in Detroit, and you know, John, you've been around here in Canada. You covered him more, so I would say, you know, he's been played incredible hockey. I even think that, I think Connor's 24 years of age now, and he's just really coming into his prime years. You know, it's, you know, certainly when you're 21 and 22 and 23, you know, they're prime years and. Terms of your your skill set, but I think when you get to be 24, 25, 26, 27, you combine that with your knowledge of the league, you know, the experiences that you've been through in the league that I think are really important in order to elevate any athlete's game. So, you know, he's just really coming into his prime right now. And so I can't compare him to, you know, where he was 3 and 4 years ago. I mean, other than goals and assists and points, but I've got now here for a year and a half to watch him on an every night basis. And he's incredible. I don't have words.
He is doing things a little differently. Like he's shooting more this year. And I tell you what, I've joked with his agent, Jeff Jackson, many times that people say Connor can't shoot. Well, I'll tell you what, this year he's disproving that. He's much more aggressive and more selfish with the puck, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with it. I think he's shooting more. And I think when I came here a year and a half ago and I hired Dave Tippett as the coach, I think that the other thing is everybody is bought into, there's certain things you have to do, I think, in order to be successful as a team, especially, you know, come playoff time. And they've worked, you know, our team, Connor, Leon and Darnell Nurse. And but they've worked very, very hard and they're very, very committed to, doing the things that Dave Tippett has asked of them for our team to be successful. So, you know, certainly, you know, everybody sees and you look at the highlights, the goals and assists, but in order to win as a team, there's other things that need to happen. And I think those things are happening here. And I think that's, you know, we're 18-7 our last 25 games. Mm-hmm. I like the way we're playing the game. You know, like I look at the game the other night against Winnipeg, we're down 2-0. We score a goal. Connor scores an incredible goal to get us 2-1, and we were comfortable being down 2-1. And we went to the third period down 2-1, and we found a way in the third period to score a couple of goals and against a really good hockey team and found a way to win. And those are learning experiences. Those are playoff type of games. You can't just score lots of goals and score the first goal every night in the playoffs and think that you're going to kind of roll through 16 wins and be the Stanley Cup champion. You've got to deal with adversity and you're going to lose. And we started this conversation earlier about the Toronto series. You're going to lose games and you're going to be behind on series. And, you know, I think about, years ago, Pittsburgh, we were up 3-2 in 2009. They won game 6 and they won game 7. They were the Stanley Cup champion. You've got to deal with adversity. And if you want to be the last team standing, you're going to have to find ways to win games from behind. And you're going to have to find ways to win games 2-1. And some nights you're going to be behind and you're going to have to be able to score some goals in a high scoring game. There's going to be a whole bunch of different ways that you've got to win games. I like that. I think that we beat Winnipeg 2-1 last Thursday, and a few weeks ago we were down 5-1 against somebody and made it 5-5, but we lost 6-5. So we're competing. We're getting comfortable. Our team is getting comfortable in lots of different ways to win hockey games, but we're playing good defensive hockey. We're getting good goaltending. We're competing every night, and certainly having Connor and Leon and Darnell Nurse has had a big year, a breakout year. We've got players on our team that can come up with big plays when the game's on the line. So I like the direction we're headed. Certainly we got to continue to grow as a team, but I think that we've made a lot of progress here as a hockey team, not only through last year and into this year. We got to continue to kind of grow and be in more of those situations. And sometimes you're going to fail and you got to get up off the mat and get back at it. But I like the direction that we're headed right now.
Another point on McDavid before we let you go. 6 years ago when he was drafted, it was no question he was the number one draft pick. And, you were in Detroit at the time. And I'm wondering if you recollect whether you thought he was, and I think you'll understand this, there are guys who are obviously number ones and guys who are obviously special. And those obviously special guys don't come along every year. There isn't always, that first draft choice isn't always a guaranteed superstar player. Sometimes you just don't know. Did you think this guy was this good? Do you remember?
Well, Bob, I didn't. I think we were a playoff team. What was his draft year, John? 2014 or
15? 15. Yeah.
Yeah, 15. I think we had a
playoff. He and Jack Eichel.
Yeah, I think we played. You know, when your team's a playoff team, I think that's the year we lost to Tampa Bay in either seven or because they beat us twice in a row. So we were a playoff team. So I think I might have saw Connor play a game or two. But we're not picking high, so I'm not really getting in there to watch. Certainly, talking to our scouting staff, people, you knew that Connor had he was the obvious number one, and he was a special player. And obviously, Jack Eichel was in that draft. He was going to be a special player too. So I didn't really get in to watch Connor very often, but certainly was aware that he had special talents. But I think Bob, the draft, the NHL, you and I've talked about the draft. The draft is about, potential. And we look at the skill maker, as you go through the draft, can they skate? Can they shoot? Can they do this? How big are they? How fast are they? What success have they had? And I think in watching lots of great players, in Detroit for all those years and now coming to Edmonton and being around the league, certainly that's an important, you got to have skills, you got to skate, but it's also how important the athlete, how committed and determined and how strong the fire is burning to be great. And that's, Connor's got all that with the quickness and the speed and the hockey sense and the hands and, his ability to win puck races and puck battles and so many other things that it really, it's because of his determination, because of his passion that he wins those races and he wants to be in those races and those battles, those puck battles. That's another quality that you don't really know.
You don't at 18.
Bob, I remember going on the radio my last year in Detroit with you, and you asked me on a Tuesday night, all the years in the draft, what's the hardest thing about the entry draft? And I remember saying to you, I didn't know what everybody asked me that question. And I remember saying, my response was, the hardest thing is that the players that we're looking at that are draft eligibles, for the most part, all they've had is success. That's why they're draft eligible, because they're just more talented than everybody else. And when you hit pro hockey, adversity's coming. And how are these players going to deal with adversity is going to be, the checking and the size of the National Hockey League. That's how they make a living. That's how NHL players feed their families, is by being very good at what they do. And that's, I think, when you turn pro, such an important ingredient that you're not really sure about these young players until they turn pro. And Connor checks every box. It's not only the skill set that you see, but it's the commitment, commitment year round, the off season, the training, the sacrifice, the determination in season and out of season that goes along with his skill set that sets him apart from, that makes him a generational player and a special player.
Kenny, you have a game ahead of you, and
we hope
good run for your hockey team the last little while. We wish you continued success this year. Look forward to seeing you in the playoffs, if that's even possible in this COVID environment, but I think you know what I mean. And as always, on behalf of John, thank you so much for your time. You're always generous with it, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks, Kenny.
Anytime. Yeah, thanks, guys. Take care. John, Bob, bye-bye.
The general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, Ken Holland. We'll come back after this message. McCowan and Shannon on the program for this Tuesday. Again, our thanks to Ken Holland of the Edmonton Oilers for
joining us. Stuck in his hotel room in Montreal.
Well, and I assume everybody that's listening to this is aware that a COVID incident popped up and caused the cancellation of a game between the Oilers and Montreal the other night. Do we know? Well, we don't know if they're going to play tomorrow, right?
We don't yet. By late afternoon, probably around 6:30, there should be some discussion about what's supposed to happen. What happened was the two Montreal players tested positive and then went to the morning skate. So that means that everybody in that dressing room in Montreal now needs to be retested to ensure that they haven't been infected with the virus. So that's the challenge of the off day in Montreal. And if they have enough players to put a team together, then there will be a game, Oilers Canadiens, on Wednesday night.
Well, that's assuming that everybody passes their test. And
correct.
We don't know whether that's going to happen. And it's so interesting. I respect the National Hockey League for pulling the plug on that game with two players testing positive. And, you know, last week we were talking about the Toronto Raptors and the NBA letting them play with a bunch of guys named who, when their entire coaching staff and five players, three starters, had COVID. So,
well, the NHL really believed yesterday it's a case of contact tracing. These guys went into the dressing room after before they knew they had it, but realized they did have it, that there's a chance that there could be a huge outbreak in Montreal.
No, I understand. And we'll keep our fingers crossed over the next little while, few hours probably, before we really know how serious that situation will be. I couldn't have Kenny on and not spend some time talking about McDavid. We tend to overlook that kind of stuff a lot.
And I know.
We really shouldn't. But another name that he brought up two or three times that you wanted to talk a little bit about is Darnell Nurse, who doesn't get, like, we know who gets the ink in Edmonton. McDavid number one, Draisaitl number two. And justifiably, but Darnell Nurse is a significant part of that team, has become an incredibly significant part of that team. Your thoughts?
Very much so. Yeah. And I mean, I actually think the way the season's gone is the number three discussion is Mike Smith, and Darnell gets moved down to number four.
Might be right. Yeah.
And it's not really fair because remember this, he wasn't supposed to be their number one defenseman. Oscar Klefbom was supposed to be their number one defenseman, got lost for the season, has had surgery. And Nurse, who was a first round pick, was supposed to be played for Kyle Dubas in Sault Ste. Marie and Sheldon Keith in Sault Ste. Marie, was supposed to be a marquee defenseman. But leveled off and plateaued for about three seasons. Mm-hmm. And this year, his game has just exploded. He's shooting the puck more. He's scoring. He's at the top, near the top of the list of goal scoring for defensemen. He's a big part of their power play because Klefbom isn't. He's done a very good job. He truly has, Bob, become a number one defenseman.
And how old is he? you know, just refresh my memory. But he's 27, 28?
No. He played against Connor and Junior, so he's 24, 25 as well. He's in that same
age. All right, so I was a year too old.
This guy has become a bona fide quality defenseman to the point where he might be now in the conversation for the Olympic team.
Well, he's almost a stereotypical defenseman. They come into their own generally a little bit later. And this is right around when many defensemen emerge as great players. We got to get out of here. Our thanks again to the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, Ken Holland, for joining us. Another program for your listening enjoyment tomorrow, we assume. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, have a nice day and evening. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.